Welcome to the Queer Movie Podcast, celebrating the best and worst in LGBTQ plus cinema, one glorious genre at a time. I'm Rowan Ellis, and this is Hot Takes, the guest episode format where I will be joined by a special guest, or in this case, three special guests, I have been spoilt, who have come ready with three queer movie hot takes that they'll need to persuade me of in three arguments or less. I am very excited to welcome three of the amazing people behind Growing Pains, which is a new coming-of-age queer drama, Catherine Argyropoul, Mari, and Diana Terraza. Woo! Clap, clap, clap.
Woo. So excited.
Let's go. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. I have like a little like, ooh, this is what the movie's about, if anyone from the very off-start is like, chomping at the bit, oh my gosh, so exciting, I'm listening to a podcast about queer movies and we have people who make queer movies here. I'm gonna give the little sentence line I've seen about this movie online, but I would love if you afterwards, if you're like, yes, that is entirely accurate, or if you're like, actually, we have this new pitch we're doing for it, or like, here is the extra added info that you should know if you're thinking about watching the movie. So it has been described as a coming-of-age drama about identity, sexuality, and the aftermath of surviving cancer that follows childhood best friends Zoe and Nat facing the tumultuous transition from middle to high school as their friendship drifts apart. Is that the movie in a nutshell?
Yes, that is definitely the movie. And so I am so excited. This is Mari and I's feature film writing debut and my directing debut. And it's inspired by my experience as a childhood cancer survivor and Mari's experience as a lesbian in a Hispanic household. But of course, everything is fictionalized. And yeah, it's just a great story about friendship drifting apart and what it means to come more into yourself and your identity and also question things. Like, you know, one of the characters that Deanna actually plays, she plays Nat, she is figuring out her sexuality. So that's where it also is a lesbian love story of sorts. And it's a pretty big contrast to the other character, Zoe, who has a straight relationship that's not so great, to put it lightly.
Oh my gosh, amazing. So we're going to talk a little bit at the end, I think, about the film, although I am interested to see whether any of your hot takes branch into themes or elements of this movie that we might end up talking about it a bit sooner. But typically there's one person bringing me these juicy hot takes, and they typically order them in order of like most hinged to most unhinged hot take. But I don't know if you know each other's yet, if you have a sense of who wants to go first. Is there a, okay, I'm gonna look at my screen and I'm gonna, ooh,
oh dear.
I see a hand up in the chat.
I will say my hot take is probably pretty unhinged. So I don't know if we should go first or last.
Yeah. That feels like a finale to me. That feels like a real finale energy to me. You know what, Mari, I'm looking at you, I'm thinking, okay. Number one, hit me with the hot take.
Okay, so I'm wearing my bottom shirt today. I don't know if anyone can see it. And
iconic.
I love bottoms. And, you know, after seeing it, I think my biggest hot take, I was thinking about it last night, I was like, we need more piece of shit lesbians. After seeing that movie, I was like, I need PJ. I need both of them. I need both of them. But, I mean, you know, I just think, like, to make that point a little more hinged, I just like their characters. I like what they do. I think they're fucking hilarious. I also think that Emma Seligman does a great job of just like putting these characters in these situations where I'm like, yeah, it's a really shitty thing to do. And I love it. Like, lesbians don't have to be great people. In fact, they should be bad people. And I think that's why I love the movie so much. But it's also really hilarious. But yeah, I just think more lesbians should be pieces of shit. That's my take, end quote.
I love that. 10 out of 10. So we've had like an episode about bottoms on the show. Yep. I loved, both of us actually, me and Jazza loved that movie so much. For those who don't know what bottoms is and aren't aware of how much of a piece of shit PJ is, how would you, I guess, like, what's the elevator pitch of a queer movie watcher who hasn't checked out Bottoms yet?
Okay, for me, I would say it's two lesbians who have had, they've struggled with their, I mean, they're not struggling with their sexuality. They're both out, but they really haven't, like, gotten laid yet. So they start a fight club to get laid. Like, that's really the pitch. And that it shows you, like, kind of how shitty they are. And as for PJ's character, you know, not going to spoil anything, of course, but she's an asshole. And it's hot. It works. Like, and Rachel Sennett does a great job of portraying that. Whereas I think Io does a great job with the with Josie's character as well. But yeah, that's how I would describe it, at least.
Amazing. So do you have any evidence to bring to the queer movie court here, where you've come with this bold claim, this hot take that I, for the sake of spoilers, will not tell you if I agree with right now. Okay. I do. But if, you know, I assume I have yet to be persuaded by simply you saying your hot take. Please, could you present to the court your evidence or your reasoning for this?
Yeah, I think in like queer movie history, obviously, like we know, like the Hays Code before that, like lesbians were not really allowed to be on film, you know, gay people were not allowed to be in the conversation at all. And I think since just like the, I guess, the turn of the century, I don't know, there's been more lesbian representation that has been centered around, you know, coming out stories, which I love and I think they're great. And, you know, Catherine and I talk about this with Growing Pains as well, but, you know, I think it's, we've kind of hit a point where I'm like, I love coming of age, but I also would like to see just more, what's the word, well-rounded representation and more like, just like real humane. I wouldn't say that PJ is humane. Like, you know, the movie is very, it's a black humor, you know, like it's very dark humor, but in the same sense, I think that's okay. And I think that lesbians should be able to be assholes and be pieces of shit because their sexuality isn't the only part of them anymore. I think we've reached that point in cinema and also just like in queer filmmaking. And I am happy that Emma Seligman did that with PJ's character, as well as, you know, Josie's character. She's a piece of shit too, but not as much as PJ. But yeah, I just think we've reached a point where we can have these characters be complex and, you know, assholes if they want to be. And, you know, if I just don't think we need like the nice lesbian anymore. We can still have it. I love it. But it's fun to have more representation in that sense. And I, you know, as for like funniness, I think it's great to have lesbians who are aware of that as well and kind of representing that. But yeah, that's my pitch.
I took a truly heinous amount of psychic damage from the fact that you referred to the 1990s into the 2000s as turn of the century. That's the worst thing anyone's ever said to me. In fact, you like right now, you're really giving that like piece of shit villain energy.
I'm happy for that.
Just from that. Yeah. I feel like you shot me right in the chest there. But yeah, no, I think you're, I mean, not to already give away that I am in agreement with you, but I am so very much agreed with this idea of, you know, allowing, not necessarily feeling creatively hemmed in by the possibility of homophobes taking arsehole lesbian characters the wrong way.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of like you can't, it is one of those things where it's like, oh God, so many people are like, is this the right time? Do we need to, you know, is this the right kind of representation right now? Like this could maybe reflect badly on the community. And I kind of feel like, do we want to be living for those people? Do we want to be like, hey, queer artists, actually, if you could just tone it down a little bit because, you know, this guy over here is not really into that. They want the lesbians to be a bit nicer and maybe to fuck more on screen, but like in like a male gazy way, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think that applies to all women or female characters, rather. Like,
for sure,
we don't only want to see buttoned up depictions of women on screen and showing like feminine rage and showing these depictions that are like imperfect. I think is more authentic to reality versus being like, here's your perfect little girl, you know, like that's not how everyone is and how everyone shows up. And I love deeper characters, so I totally agree with that too.
For sure.
And I feel like with, I don't know whether you agree with this, Mari, but I feel like with lesbian characters especially, there's this sense of like that lesbian rage is always like, or oftentimes is seen as like man-hating rage. It's like the angry feminist lesbian, like they're kind of used as a character who's like the butt of the joke, as opposed to being like, here is a legitimate anger that they have, which I have theories about. I feel like there's definitely a sense of that if we portrayed like queer people as angry at homophobia, then there would be a sense of like, that might be uncomfortable for an audience who has to acknowledge the fact that they are like complicit in homophobia in some way, especially if it's not the homophobia where it's like someone's literally doing a like gay bashing on the person, but it's like more insidious homophobia, that it's harder for people to look at that and be like, oh yeah, maybe I should be a better person. So it's much easier to be like, oh my gosh, it's really, oh, these lesbians are always so angry. Like, well, you know, calm down, babes. Like, eat some more hummus. Like, it's fine. Okay, so did you have anything else that you wanted to bring to the table? To, if there's anyone listening right now who's for some reason unconvinced and is like, actually, I love my lesbian characters to be very nice always and nothing else.
No, I mean, the only thing that I'd have to add is that it certainly helps that Rachel Sennett is the one portraying PJ. I've had a crush on her for quite a long time. Rachel, if you're listening. But she plays a piece of shit well. So I know she'll take that, with a grain of salt. But yeah, if you're not convinced, watch Bottoms. That's all I'm going to say.
Has everyone on the call seen that movie?
Yeah, I love that movie.
I have a hard time finishing movies. Like, oh, I don't know. God. And so, like, I started it, and then I was like, oh, wait, I have a lot of things I need to do. And then I completely forgot to get back to it. Now I need to.
That's why I love seeing things in the theater, because sometimes when I watch at home, I can be distracted, and it's just nice to be, like, fully immersed and see it on the big screen, for sure.
100%.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that. The fact that I have to watch the movies for the podcast is actually really, it's helping. And sometimes me and Jazza will message each other and we'll realize that we're both watching the movie immediately before we're going to record. Like, we're truly at the last minute, like to the minute we're going to finish watching this movie, and then we're jumping straight on to discuss it. So I definitely feel like I very much feel you on that. I'm very similar in terms of, like, there's so many movies that don't have any work compulsion to watch, where I'm like, get halfway through and then get distracted by something else. But yeah, Bottoms is one of those ones that I simply voraciously watch the entire way through, in part because of the assholery. And also it feels like it's like, I don't know whether when you were younger you watched a lot of the sort of like teen movies that had guys in the lead roles who would, their whole thing would be basically this plot line of like, I want to get laid, or I want to like sleep with the cheerleaders, or I want to like trick a girl into liking me. How do you feel about that sort of like reclaiming maybe like other more straight traditional narratives for queerness? Like, you've literally just got this like queer coming of age, which traditionally has been a very straight genre with very straight parameters. Like, how do you feel about negotiating the traditional elements of that genre and then doing something new with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really smart, in part on like Emma Seligman's part in like writing it, and also Rachel Sennett as well. Like, I think it's very tongue in cheek in the way that they write it. Like, they're making fun of it. You know, I mean, they're very obvious in making fun of that genre, but they also, it play to the tropes of it. And I think it works really well in terms of like, as for, you know, young lesbians that were watching those movies and kind of were like, oh, I think I don't want to be the girl. I think I want to be the guy in this movie. Like, I don't know why I'm feeling that. And then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you realize like 10 years later, okay, yeah, I was just gay. but yeah, so I think that's really what it is. I think it's great to kind of like take those stereotypes and reclaim them. And I think it's something that I hope is done more, because it just is very successful. And, you know, it doesn't mean I like want a Bottoms too, because I think one is perfect. But yeah, I think it does a good job of taking those, if you call them like straight rom-coms. I don't even know what you would say, like raunchy comedies maybe.
Oh, God, ew.
but exactly. It is that genre. It's like this like bad humor that's like very much like, and it doesn't work because that's written for straight men and for, it's about straight men. But, you know, in terms of this one, I think they took the lesbians in the writer's room. They did, and it worked very well. But yeah.
Yeah, and it was long overdue. I feel like it's been very long overdue that we have queer coming of age. And especially during a time where coming of age as a genre is so stagnant and stale right now, which had to happen because I feel like we're getting a lot of the same things. I feel like now introducing queerness into the mix is revamping that genre in a way we haven't seen yet, and we just need more. I feel like we need more. We also need more representation as well. I feel like Bottoms did an amazing job of having a lot of queer and POC representation, which is still lacking heavily in the industry. And so, yeah, my girl Ayo, I feel like she's trailblazing. She's from Boston too, period.
Yeah, I love her so much.
She's trailblazing right now with, like, you know, the queer BIPOC energy and films, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, the Princess of Ireland. The Bostonian Princess of Ireland. All of our, the people's princess. I totally agree. And I think that it is this, what Bottoms did, and I feel like Do Revenge, and there's like a few other ones that have come out recently where it's not just doing a coming of age that feels quite dry or quite, like, honestly quite boring, where the only, like, oh, the exciting thing is they're gay. That there's something else going on there, that there's some style, that there's some pizzazz, there's like some kind of cinematic vision, there's an aesthetic to it, there's something interesting going on. Because I think we're so I mean, I grew up in that heyday of just coming off the back of the 90s and into the 2000s mm-hmm. of those, yeah, teen movies that were so iconic that I feel like I was slightly spoiled a little bit mm-hmm. for being like just kind of 10 Things I Hate About You into the Mean Girls territory. Like, it was such a good time, but it was also because all of them were having, they all had their own really specific like pitch, I guess. Like, you could kind of it's very high concept, like you can explain it in a couple of sentences, and it like, here is the hook, here's what it's going to be. And I feel like maybe for too long the queer coming of age, such that it has been, the hook was just like, they're gay, that's the hook.
Yep.
Whereas I feel like they lesbians start a fight club to hook up with cheerleaders is, you can't really go wrong, can you?
No. And you know, like, you know, one thing that I think we haven't said yet is that it certainly helps, like, the people in the movie are attractive. Like, they're hot. Like, everyone's hot, and it works. And, you know, it's what I think the casting crew just did a great job with that. But it's like, yeah, it works. Lesbians, we can be hot. We can be pieces of shit. But back mm-hmm. to that, like, it works in a great way. But yeah, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is going in my hot take success book. Okay. More hot evil lesbians is definitely tick, persuaded. It was almost like you persuaded me the moment that those initial words left your mouth. But I'm going to say also your arguments, the call to history, the Hays Code, it was all really very persuasive. Catherine, can you make this a 2 for 2? What is your hot take?
Yeah, I hope so. I feel like mine is good to piggy off of Mari's hot take, and I think it's a bit more serious too. My hot take is that I think there should be more movies showing people questioning their sexuality and not necessarily getting full closure on or clarity on it by the end of the movie, because I do think sexuality is a spectrum, and there's a lot of TV shows about this, but there's not as many movies, and movies are typically coming of age, coming out depictions.
I love that. Intrigued, obsessed. I'm going to ask you for your, you know, what is your evidence? What is your logic behind this? Persuade us, Catherine.
For sure. I mean, just a background on me, I write from personal experience and inspiration. And yes, my characters and everything are fictionalized, but I love to bring a piece of myself to my writing. And I think that recently I've just been questioning, you know, I identify as queer, but I'm not sure I identify as how I thought I did a few years ago. And I do feel like sexuality is such a spectrum, and some people really identify with the more binary, like identify as being straight or bi or lesbian. But I am more comfortable just saying queer because I'm still figuring it out. And I think that a lot of the times in movies, especially because it's a limited format, like ideally under 2 hours, but sometimes even like 3.5 for longer form movies, like I think it's a little harder to leave things more open-ended and leave characters like questioning or not get clarity, especially for the sake of like closing the story and getting resolution in other ways. And I think a great movie that does a good example of this is Brokeback Mountain, because at the end of it too, you don't totally know like where either of the characters are, even though you do know they're both queer. And I also love how they're later in life, like they're full adults, and you know, even with Growing Pains, it's a coming of age drama, and Deanna's character, Nat, she is coming out as a lesbian, but it's very much a coming out story, and she finds love, and it's very much her trying to figure out her place with her family dynamic and how they're going to respond because she's in a conservative household, and also her friendship dynamic. So it's more than just her coming out and finding love and how to express that. But I do think a lot of the movie examples are these like coming out stories, and there's more freedom in TV because it's a longer form. Like, I think Sex Education is probably such a great example of this, and just a great example for representation on all fronts with diversity and disability and queerness. But I do think there's like, you know, characters, I think it's Eric's partner in the beginning, he's like questioning his sexuality, and it takes him a little while to like come to terms with where he is. And I love just seeing like people figuring themselves out, and especially with like Brokeback Mountain, the like later in life depiction, because I thought I was straight until I was like 21. Like, I did not know. So I love, you know, I'm still early on in my life. I'm 26, but I still feel like there's a lot that's showing like, oh, I'm gay and, you know, the movie is Bros or Fire Island. And I love that. Like, they're so in line with who they are and they know, but that's also not the reality for a lot of people. So just mm-hmm. opening up the floor for more representation, I think, is helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, I kind of like, again, already persuaded me, spoiler alert, but I do feel like you're kind of hitting the nail on the head in terms of like with film, there is this traditional like three act structure. And yeah. so you either have like, mm-hmm. they come out at the beginning and then it's a journey of acceptance. And then at the end, everything's great or not so great, but there's like a conclusion of some kind, or it's like they're figuring it out, but then in the third act they have to be like, and here's the scene where I say what I am. Yeah. And then that's like, that's the important thing, is like you come out to someone else almost, like that's the valid third act conclusion. And I do feel like there's some interesting movies I've seen that do have a little bit more ambiguity to them, like the Half of It or yeah. Princess Sid, yeah. which feel like they've like, I've really appreciated them for exactly that reason that you've said, where it's like, oh, actually they leave a little bit ambiguous, not because they're trying to be like, ooh, you know, we're so sneaky, you'll never know. It's like, no, this character isn't at a place where they're like, oh, I'm going to have a word and that's what I'm going to use. And that's, you know, the end of a chapter. We can tie up the movie with a bow now. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting one. Is that something that you have seen within movies, like other than Brokeback Yourself, that you feel like is like, oh yeah, this felt like it made sense to me in terms of that exploration? Or is it something where you're like, there were movies that you felt like this would have made way more sense if at the end they weren't already at that place, like it felt rushed or it felt like you wanted something different from it?
Yeah, well, I have 2 points to add to that. And first mm-hmm. is just, you know, Mari and I actually wrote Growing Pains as a spec for a 4-season TV show that would follow mm-hmm. 4 to 5 young women through teenhood all the way to post-grad and post-college. And so Growing Pains is just a little snippet of what these characters and their lives would look like. It's definitely a lot more buttoned up because the sake of the movie format versus TV than a typical episode would be. But I do think, you know, if we were to get the deal to make Growing Pains and adapt it into a TV show, like, you know, a character like Nat or whoever is playing just a different role that isn't a straight character wouldn't have like 1 episode, 2 episode coming out sexuality, discovery, identity. So I think it would be a longer form thing. And that's why I love sex education. And also, it's not just 1 or 2 characters. It's so many characters who are queer or asexual or, you know, lesbian, pan, bi. Like, they have like, I feel like it's every depiction in the book, and it's so accurate to real life. And, you know, just being in a diverse school with, they're in school with like 400 kids, like, or in a grade or something, it's like a big school and you're bound to have all walks of life in that. So I love that. And I think I'm just going to plug my favorite movie, Dead Poets Society. I love Dead Poets Society so much. I have it on a hat, which I wear all the time. But Dead Poets, I believe like a lot of those characters are not straight and their depictions are straight. Like Neil, totally gay. Todd, mm-hmm. probably gay, could be bi. And like a lot of the other characters are just like not straight, and they never had time to like explore it in depth. And also, I don't think it was like as honestly like socially acceptable, because Dead Poets Society is a film from the 80s, and it takes place in, for those who don't know, it takes place in like a religious boarding school with all boys, and it's very conservative. And, you know, I think that maybe they weren't ready to like just be like, oh, some of these characters are not straight and they're, you know, queer and they're potentially questioning their sexuality. And I think it could work in favor of the movie because it's like really beautiful. Like, they don't necessarily need to have the characters kiss to make them queer. Like, and mm-hmm. we still know as viewers after, like, oh, there was some romantic chemistry. Like, they weren't just friends. So mm-hmm. I think in that sense, even though Dead Poets doesn't explicitly say, like, Neil and Todd are gay, like, those who know, know.
Yeah, I feel like as well, like, sometimes thematically, it makes more sense to have queerness there, but to not necessarily be like, and then the label is put on it. Like, sometimes the yeah. exploration or like the themes of the movie itself are things to do with exploration, like unfinished discoveries, like the idea that it's, you're not like fully cooked, like you don't just like get into the oven at like 13 and you come out at 18 and it's like, ding, you're there, there we go, you're fully formed. Mm-hmm. And like thematically, those ideas of like questioning things, of like growth and decay, like all of those things, which again, like if you're talking about Dead Poets Society and that kind of exploration of like creativity and connection and all of that, like it does make sense thematically to not necessarily then insert a kind of like, oh yes, and now we're going to do a coming out storyline within this, which is like entirely wrapped up by the end nice and neatly, because that's kind of, that messiness is part of it.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love how I have a feeling Deanna's take is going to be very different from the unhinged description. So I love how just like all over the map we are with our mm-hmm. takes.
Yeah. And just to speak to your point, Catherine, and your take, like, I, living in New York, I've realized that like there are so many different versions of queerness that I didn't even know existed and are yet to be unveiled. Even like to the point where I almost want to like write my own story about like the things that I've experienced and the things that I've seen. I tried and I just need to like sit down and like keep going. But like I feel like a lot of people, like especially in New York, there's not a lot of judgment here. So you can really just do whatever you want and see what hits and what doesn't. And I feel like a show or a movie that explores that, like people just like trying new things and seeing what they like and what they don't like. Like, there's sex clubs in New York. What? That's insane. Are you kidding me? Like, tell me why I already know two. Not that I've been.
Not that you've been.
No. Twitch not that I've been. But, you know, wait, like.
No that. Judgment. No judgment here.
Yeah. But, like, that's crazy. Like, what is that like? And I know HBO had a documentary. My mom made me watch it before I moved to New York because it was an exploration of some of these different avenues, specifically polyamory and polyamorous relationships and how they manifest in New York and how, like, you know, the struggles. And is it hard or easy to have like 6 boyfriends and 3 girlfriends? Like, what is that like? Like, we don't know. That's not explored and that's not like mainstreamed, and I feel like it could be like, let's open these people's eyes. Like, we live in a very conservative country. I feel like not a lot of people actually in the U.S. at least, not to speak to where you're from, Rowan, but I know for the U.S. we live in a very conservative country, and you know, maybe we should open some of these people's eyes and make them realize that, like, you know, the world is a lot crazier than they think.
Yeah, the best advice I got was from Mari yesterday, because I, you know, was just sharing like my personal lore and also a little bit of my hot take. And also my cousin said the same thing, and my cousin said this to me when she was 17. And I was like, this is very wise. But just that you don't need to put a label on things. Like, it's okay mm-hmm. to still be figuring yourself out no matter what age you are. And that's why I like, you know, just because it's not straight and that's not what I am, but it doesn't necessarily need to be something that is fully formed right now until I feel comfortable, you know, and feel like I know more. And that's just like with life experience and time, I hope that comes, but maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
For sure. I would love for us to hear the final hot take. Let's go. I feel like I'm excited for this.
All right.
Lay it on us.
I hope it hasn't been said before. I don't know, like, so it's funny that you brought up Brokeback Mountain, because my hot take is about that. And I feel like it didn't really make sense to me that Jake Gyllenhaal was a bottom. I think that he was not supposed to be the bottom, and that's my hot take. Keith Ledger should have been the bottom.
I'm
obsessed with this.
I love that that wasn't not my thought, but
yeah, I didn't think that's what it was either. And I, okay, convinced. Go ahead, go.
Yeah, come on,
here we go.
So firstly, when you watch the movie, Heath Ledger, he's so, I mean, he's not like neither of them are giving twink, which is great because I think like we have never seen like that, you know, the two, you know, masculine cowboys. But Heath Ledger was kind of like, he was more cutesy, like he was more quiet, more reserved. And even when they had their scene where they were, you know, finally like revealed to themselves, Jake Gyllenhaal made the move. And I feel like Heath kind of stole the light from him. Like, I feel like it was supposed to be the opposite. And maybe Heath was supposed to be like, and he was the whole time. He was kind of like, oh my God, what are we doing? And I feel like Jake Gyllenhaal should have, you know, Jack Twist should have taken the ropes and really geared him in. And he had that energy the whole time, even like with the lasso pulling him in, like in that last scene, like, come on now, let's make it make sense, because it really wasn't. And I just want to shout out Brokeback too, also, because it wasn't, I really appreciated how the movie wasn't like super graphic or anything. And I feel like a lot of queer movies can fall into like being super, super, super sexual, which I mean, some people, you know, some people are really comfortable with that. Personally, like I'm always just like a little like, anytime I watch any movie that has too much going on, unless they do it right, I'm always like, you know, but yeah, that's my hot take. And that's my argument. I mean, watch the movie for yourself and tell me I'm wrong.
So I have the most unhinged first time watching Brokeback Mountain story, which is that I watched it for the first time while I was in Germany on the German exchange, like a school exchange as a teenager. And was paired with someone whose mum was an English teacher and so therefore did not want to speak German at home because wanted to practice English. So I got away with basically just not having to speak German on this German exchange for most of the time, which was very fun. And then for me, who could not speak German, was very terrible at learning languages. And then this girl was like, yeah, so I watched, there's this new movie, like, I don't know if you've heard of it. And me being a voracious gay was like, I've heard of Brokeback Mountain. I've never seen it. Have you got it? And she's like, yeah, me and my friends watched it. It's meant to be really sad, but like, it was fine. Like, it's not crazy or anything. Like, it was all right. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I can watch it while you're like out tonight at your like soccer practice or whatever. I was like sobbing to the point where her parents had to come in and make sure I wasn't like, I think thought I was homesick. And I was like, I'm just crying over these dead gay cowboys. Don't mind me. This is not, I actually don't care about my family at all. I miss them not a bit. I mainly am crying about these two boys. Just, I think it's like such an iconic like moment in film history. It's such a historic sort of movie in terms of how celebrated it was and in terms of the casting, of how kind of like high profile the actors were. I'm not gonna lie, my preoccupation with those scenes is like, where did you find the lube? Like, did you pack that stuff? Like,
they didn't have anything.
They
just
spit on their hand.
They were spitting, and I'm like, that's some fan fiction level, or we're like using like cooking oil from the kitchens, Game of Thrones level nonsense. No. I'm like, come on now, this is silly. There's other things you could be doing together. This, you know. This wasn't the only type of sex that gay men can have.
Right. That's the same exact thing. I was like, no way they're not using lube. And then they're also like not doing anything else. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
Because they were also like repressed in many ways. And I think like some people, kissing might feel even more intimate if that's like... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coming to a consensus on your queerness, you know, was my interpretation, but I totally agree with you guys.
Listeners, answer this question for us. Is it gay to fuck your bro in a tent? Is that gay? Answers in the chat, please.
Please respond.
Who knows? Is that something you should do if you're straight? Is that something that's going to be helpful for you and your journey to straightness? Yeah, I love this as a hot take. I feel like truly not enough filmmakers have been brought up and questioned around their choices in terms of not just the way that a love scene or a sex scene is shot, but the sexual dynamics of those characters and whether they've really thought enough about who is topping. Stunning. That was beautiful. Mm-hmm. That was I'm convinced. I truly like I need to go back and watch that movie and be like, what was actually happening here? Can we dissect this? Because it feels like it's this. I'm gonna have to ask you. Is this a thought that you have often while watching these movies? Are you like, every time a sex scene happens, you're like, well, I don't know if that's accurate. Those weren't the vibes I was getting.
Definitely. Because I think a lot of movies, I mean, thank God now that there's intimate coordinators and people who actually like study sex and study like what's real about it or whatnot. And I feel like the best example so far we've had of like realistic like sex and it being graphic as well was like Normal People. And that was one of the first times I watched a show. And first of all, we need that in gay. Anyway, but that was the first time I watched the show and was like, and saw like, oh wow, like this is graphic, but it's also very sensual. It doesn't feel sexual, even though, you know, you kind of saw everything. And like, I feel like we need to bring that energy into more rom-coms. I feel like a lot, or into more romantic movies. I feel like a lot of them are just like, you know, and like not actually mapped out and done beautifully and done artistically.
Yeah, that was something Mari and I were really cognizant about for all depictions of romantic and intimate relationships with growing pains, because we are so aware, just as female writers, how over-sexualized intimacy is and sex is. And we were like, that is so like sensitive too when you're talking about minors, because Growing Pains is about two best friends in their summer before high school. So they're 13 years old. So we have like a very sensitive approach to how all romantic or physical scenes are filmed and shown on screen. And also I loved working with our intimacy coordinator. Mm. It was just really nice. And also I never realized how much like choreography kissing has, or like all of that, and that was like so helpful to have someone, you know, with that background be able to advise. And then it makes the actors feel more comfortable, it makes everyone on set know that that's a priority for our team, to make sure comfort is first and like feeling safe and respected in your situation.
Love that. Yeah, no, I mean, I, well, first of all, unless you had any other evidence to bring to the court to back up this hot take, I'm going to say hot take approved. This was a 3 for 3 episode. I'm going to say congratulations to everyone.
Yes.
Beautiful. We're writing it into the annals of the Queer Movie Podcast. Again, if anyone would like to actually go through these episodes and write down all of the hot takes I've agreed to, because I've realized that I haven't actually done that anywhere. And there's very few that I've disagreed with, to be fair. I feel like I've picked top quality guests who have come with some very serious hot takes that I've been utterly persuaded by. I wanted to ask kind of finally about the movie, if people are listening to this and being like, I respect these hot takes and I am intrigued, is this we were saying earlier that you've got a little film festival premiere situation happening, like where is this a movie that people can watch yet? Is this a movie that they can support in some way?
Oh, there's so many ways to support, mainly by sharing our social media page to your story or with a friend, just because we're a very independent film. This was made all locally by a team of women in Massachusetts, and, you know, funded by a crowdfunding campaign and grants and self-funded. So it's very much like a scrappy little independent project. So really just helping us get the word out about the film is huge. Our socials are at Growing Pains Movie. And basically, we're having our world premiere at Boston International Film Festival, which is really, really exciting. And if people are local to Massachusetts, we're having two big premieres the week of April 10th. So there's more info about that on our social media. But the hope and goal is to be distributed nationally and ideally internationally on a streaming platform. But we share a lot on our socials. We share photos from the film. We also have a trailer, which is very exciting. We've had the trailer for a while because sometimes independent films wait until they're in a festival and then they announce. But the trailer gives you a really good overview of our two main characters, Nat and Zoe, who are drifting apart over the summer and the things that they go through. And Zoe's very different from Nat. And she's, you know, based on my experience as a cancer survivor, and so she's struggling with her mental health and she develops body dysmorphia as an aftermath of having cancer. And it's very, you know, contrasted with what Nat is going through, because she's figuring out her sexuality and finding love for the first time and developing feelings that are sweet and soft for a woman for the first time, and figuring out how she's going to find acceptance and love with her family because they're rather conservative, or, you know, she's figuring out that dynamic. And like I said in the beginning, it's quite a contrast to Zoe has a relationship, and I won't give any spoilers away, but it's very not the sweet relationship you see with Nat's character with Lexi. And you'll find out when you watch the film. But yeah, just giving us a follow on socials, sharing it with a friend if you're interested in the film is huge. We had some big wins for the film. We were listed on a Sundance Diversity Spotlight, which was really, really cool. And the Sundance Institute also nominated us with Woman in Film for the Reframe stamp, which indicates all-inclusive hiring in 8 major positions, including writer, director, and, you know, key heads of production like the cinematographer. So that actually is like a really rigorous requirement to fill, and I believe it might be more rigorous than the Oscars, like, standard for diversity for their films. So it's just an honor because, you know, we were made by a really diverse team of women and some queer and non-binary filmmakers as well. And yeah, I don't know, Mari or Deanna, do you want to add anything about Growing Pains or your experience?
Yeah, I mean, this experience has really changed my life. You know, one as a lesbian, a Latinx lesbian, who has not really seen her experience, you know, in mainstream film. Like, obviously, it's existed outside the mainstream. But, you know, that's one of the reasons that I was so happy to connect with Catherine, I think, what was it, 3 years ago at this point?
Yeah, in September.
So, you know, I'm really excited to be able to share this film with the community, the Boston community, and just like the film community. But yeah, I love films and I love writing, and I'm just happy that me and Catherine were able to make this happen, because it really is it's a feat. And I'm really proud of the work we've done. So I'll be excited to hear what people think about it. But I think it's great. You know, I'm biased, but
totally. And we submitted to a bunch of film festivals, actually all over the country and internationally. So fingers crossed for us. But we do have communities of cast and crew and friends and family in New York, where Deanna is, and some team members who relocated, also in Florida and also in North Carolina, where Mari is, and in Los Angeles, where I am. So we're hoping to get into a formal film festival in those regions and then plan an independent screening, like a community screening open to the public and for our cast and crew. So people can buy tickets to those. So if you're interested in watching the film, we will be coming to a city near you, hopefully. So
amazing. It's been so wonderful talking to you all. I'm so happy every time I get to talk to like queer creatives and people who are contributing to this space in some way. We love talking about all of the like hot new releases, but also some of the more like indie stuff and movies that have been sort of forgotten to time and more unusual, kind of more boundary pushing, like genre bending or like new kind of stuff, especially when it comes to representation. So was really excited when y'all reached out and being able to chat with you, especially because of those hot takes that were honestly gold stars.
Thank
loved,
you.
Loved every bit.
Thank you so much. It's been great to chat with you. And I mean, you're so amazing in the work that you do in the advocacy, and also your cultural work with your podcast and your writing. And so it's an honor to be included in the conversation, and we had a blast. I mean, I was cracking up. So
yeah, I had a great time.
Likewise.
That's it for another episode of the Queer Movie Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then make sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast so you are primed for our next episode in your app of choice. And if you like what you hear a particular amount, then consider supporting us over on Patreon, where we have some very fun perks on offer, including monthly Queer Movie watch-alongs on our Discord. Okay, until we see you next time. Bye.